discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like they're all, the gang's all here. Why not? So we'll move on to item number 11. Oh, sorry, Director Anderson.
Just.
Okay. Oh, thank you. That's cool.
Director Anderson?
I just wanted to make a few preliminary remarks on this item.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So most of the commissioners are aware that rockfish have been a big focal point for the commission. We had a lot of discussions around Area 4. We've had species listed under the Endangered Species Act in Puget Sound, and we've had several different rockfish species classified as overfished under the federal definition, which is that point in time when the biomass falls below 25% of the unfished biomass, and that triggers a requirement for a rebuilding program. And so we had like nine different groundfish species at one point in time that were characterized as overfished. We also have a category of overfishing. So most rockfish are, we want to maintain the population where the biomass is 40% of the unfished biomass is the minimum target we want for the biomass. And so if the population is between that 25% and the 40%, they're categorized as overfishing is taking place. And there are precautionary policies within the Pacific Fishery Management Council's groundfish management plan where there are adjustments made to the allowable harvest to rebuild those populations back to a point where they're at or above that 40% line. Some of these species, most of these species, some more than others, are really long-lived, and the process for rebuilding them takes a long, long time. And the difference between having just a few mortalities and no mortalities at all can oftentimes shorten the rebuilding time very much. Yellow-eye rockfish are classified as overfished. We have a rebuilding program along the entire West Coast, Washington and California. And I won't get these numbers exactly, but you know, if we don't have a single mortality between now and the year 2072, we'll get back to that 40% mark. Whereas if we have a small amount of mortalities, no directed fisheries, but of mortalities associated with fisheries that are directed on other species, I think it's like 2084. So I mean, it's so we also have put in place in Puget Sound, as well as along the in the Strait of Juan de Fuca and along the coast, depth restrictions, and those depth restrictions are the most severe in terms of time and area in the North Coast area, La Push, Nia Bay, where we bring that fishery inside 20 fathom for a good portion of the year. And as Heather and her guest Ron will talk about, we know that we have a differential in release mortality rates based on the depth from which those fish were taken. So you know, in the salmon world, we've employed a number of different strategies to be able to release fish with high survival rates. Obviously, no swim bladder to deal with, and they're much more conducive, like lingcod are, to being hooked and released and having those fish survive. Whereas fish that have swim bladders don't do so well. And so there's been a lot of work done along the entire West Coast, and that's where our participation in the Pacific Fishery Management Council, one of the benefits is that we're collaborating with other states as well as National Marine Fisheries Service, looking for ways to improve our management. And one of those focal areas has been, what can anglers do when they encounter a fish that's a prohibited species that they want to release to improve that fish's chances of survival? And so a lot of work has been done on survivability of released rockfish using a what we call descender devices, which you're going to hear more about. Commissioner Mankin had an opportunity to attend the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting, I think last spring, where there was a presentation on barotrauma and the steps that were being taken to try to increase survivability. Over the last several years, primarily headed up with the two folks that are sitting at the table here, Heather Reed from the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Ron Gardner from Puget Sound Anglers, have put a full court press on education of anglers about the use of descender devices, and they've achieved some really outstanding things through their efforts, through volunteer efforts of anglers. So I had asked Heather if she'd be willing to come and give a presentation to the commission today that I suspect follows somewhat along the lines of the presentation that Commissioner Mankin may have seen. I'm not sure. We'll see. And because this has been the success of this, I mean, there isn't the Department of Fish and Wildlife by itself cannot generate the kind of success with the use of these devices without really strong partners like Ron Gardner has been, and in helping educating and getting buy-in for the use of these devices and understanding how the use of these devices will maybe not provide us the opportunity to relax some of the restrictions, but maybe shorten the rebuilding time for some of these species. And in some cases, maybe it will alleviate the need for some of the really severe restrictions we have in some places, but that remains to be seen. So with that as kind of an introduction to what you're about to hear, I'm really pleased that Heather Reed and Ron Gardner could be here today. And thanks very much, Ron, for taking time out of your really busy schedule to be here with us.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Wecker. Commissioners, thank you, Phil. That was a great introduction. My name's Heather Reed. I work out of the Region 6 office in Montesano. Part of my job is managing our coastal recreational bottom fish fisheries and our Pacific halibut fisheries. I am also the WDFW representative to the Pacific Fishery Management Council's ground fish management team, which is an advisory body to the council. As Phil mentioned, I'm here today just for an informational briefing on these improved survivability of released rockfish, some of the actions that have been taken through the Pacific Fishery Management Council, and then our outreach efforts and our combined efforts with Ron and his group at Puget Sound Anglers. So, and I should introduce Ron Garner, who is the State Board President of Puget Sound Anglers.
You know, I've been here as much as as the commission.
So a little bit of what Phil mentioned is some of the background that I'd like to help orient you to why we're looking at this. And as Phil mentioned, at this point in time, there are 6 overfished species on the West Coast, being Washington, Oregon, and California. And they are managed under rebuilding plans. And these rebuilding plans do specify very low harvest quotas for our fisheries. And to put that into perspective, for our recreational fishery off Washington, for yellow eye rockfish, the harvest quota in 2013 and 2014 is 2.9 metric tons which equates to just about 1,000 fish. And so to keep our fisheries to those low levels, we have management measures that Phil mentioned, such as restricting our fishery to the area inside 20 fathoms or 120 feet. We have area closures. And since 2002 in Washington, we've prohibited the retention of yellow eye and canary rockfish. Prohibiting retention is a very common tool used for these species that's now in place in Oregon and California as well. But fisheries in the Gulf and fisheries on the East Coast also prohibit retention to rebuild stocks. But while this is a common tool for rockfish, it is sort of difficult. Their biology and the fact that they have a swim bladder to regulate themselves within the water column makes it their survival once released very difficult. So the swim bladder, as I said, regulates their position in the water column, but as they're reeled in, the gases in the swim bladder expand. And the fish you see up on the top right, the swim bladder gases have expanded to the point that it's forced the stomach out of the mouth. The gases in the eyes have caused the eyes to bulge. There are other organs and areas in their body that we don't see where the gases have also expanded. And it often results in what you're seeing in the bottom right, which are these floating fish that are released, but they're 100% mortality. But there has been some good news in recent research, and recent studies on the West Coast and a lot off of Northern California, off of Oregon, of quite a few studies, and off of Alaska have shown improved survivability when the fish is released back to the depth of capture or at least down to 60 feet. It allows the gases that have expanded to recompress so that when the fish is then released, its survival is greatly improved. So, particularly in these studies, they're studying them on species-specific basis, and another good news is that yellow eye and canary rockfish are, their survivability is quite high when recompressed. Other species, black rockfish, which you think of often, I think I do anyway, as a pretty hardy fish, its survivability is greatly improved, but not quite as much as yellow eye. And blue rockfish happen to be, at this point in the studies, being seen as a little more sensitive. So over the past year, we've been working to get this information spread to our recreational fishing community that using these devices is fairly simple, and there's a huge variety that can be used. I'll kind of go through a few of the common ones here. The one on the left is really just a handmade release device. It's a weighted inverted hook. The idea is that you can see to the next slide to the right on the top there, that's an actual Shelton fish descender that you can buy, but the concept is similar. The hook goes in inside the lip, and as you release it down, and when you either the weight hits the bottom or if you pull on the line, it will pull the weight up and cause the hook to come out so you can get the fish back to depth and then release it. The third from the right on the top is a really neat device called a sequelizer, and it's a pressure sensor device. So you can set it to the depth you want it to release, and as it goes down, it reads the pressure, and at a certain depth, the clip will unhook and release the fish by the lips. The next two on the top right and on the lower left, they're simple weighted. The weight is what is causing the clamp that's attached to the fish's lip to hold tight. When, again, you hit that weight hits the bottom, it will open the clamp, or if you yank on it, it will release the pressure and cause it to open and let the fish go. And then the weighted melt crate is a really old tool that I think some folks still use. I know you can release multiple fish using a melt crate, but it has, you know, some features. If you have a really a long distance between the side of the boat and the water, making sure that fish stays in while you get that crate to hit the water and go down might be a little bit tough, especially if it's rough weather. So within our message, there's some important things to remember. And one of the things, going back to that last slide, is choose the device that works for you. And certain devices are going to work better depending on your boat, depending on where you are, depending on the weather and your situation. But there haven't been any studies that show one works better or the survivability has changed. Just getting them back down in a timely manner is really all that matters. And leading into that, one of the most important things is to get the fish back down as soon as possible. Mortality is best if the fish can be descended within 2 minutes of being at the surface, and mortality can as much as double for every 10 minutes that the fish is on the deck of the boat. And then limiting handling time and avoiding rough handling is important. Rockfish have a slime coating that's a protective layer that if they're overhandled or they're flopping around on the deck can be damaged and decrease their survivability. And then another thing that was studied in the research are the physical signs of barotrauma, such as the stomach extruding from the mouth or the bulging eyes, are those really strong indicators of a fish's chance of survival? And the studies are showing that it's not. So even a fish in that worst of condition being released and allowing the gases to recompress has a chance of survival. And then venting is an older method that was around that is just basically the idea is that it's a needle or a prick into the swim bladder to release the pressure. It's not recommended. That's fairly consistent anymore that nobody is recommending venting. A lot of folks maybe don't know exactly where the swim bladder is or mistake the stomach that's sticking out of the mouth as what should be poked. So for our efforts this year, what we started with was producing this brochure called Protecting Washington's Rockfish. And it has just the basic information that I've kind of explained, why it's important, how you do it, great tips for doing it properly. And then we also added a component that showed fish ID. We have a really neat wide variety of rockfish in Washington State. But I think anglers at times can be intimidated with knowing or being able to say whether or not it's a yellow eye or a canary or a vermilion. And so with our outreach efforts to get folks using descending devices, we also did our best to help them identify rockfish, give them some tools that they can use. This information, along with some really neat new updated information, has been put on our webpage, and that's a really great resource that folks can then go to if they're interested in how to use descending devices. We've also put a really neat, the fish program folks worked on this. It's a fish ID page that anglers can print out and take with them. We handed out those on a write in the rain paper that are similar to what our samplers use, so they could use it as they were catching fish. They could use it to tally fish they released so that when they came back and were interviewed by our samplers, they'd have something to refer to instead of just memory. And then all of this information we presented at many different venues over the past year. And it really started last year, almost to the year when Ron invited me to come to his state board meeting and give this presentation. And at that state board meeting, you had all of the chapter presidents throughout Puget Sound for Puget Sound Anglers. So they got to know me. They then followed up and invited me to their various chapters, which I did over the winter and spring. Met a lot of people, handed out these brochures. We also had some money to purchase some of the inexpensive Shelton Descender. So we handed those out to folks. I did that same presentation at charter offices along our coast. We had a display at the Puyallup Sportsman Show. And then to get at folks that weren't maybe involved with an organized fishing group, we had booths set up right at Nia Bay and La Push for the opening of halibut season. We had intended to cod for the opening of lingcod season, which can be really popular, but it was hugely stormy, and the port people said nobody was coming. So we targeted Nia Bay and La Push for the opening of halibut, and that was great. We had our fish displays. We had descenders. Ron was there and had more descenders for folks to use. And on all of these, we displayed and we demonstrated all the different descenders too, so people could actually look at the sequelizer or look at the other ones and see how they worked as they moved on. And then Ron's group, through Puget Sound Anglers, he developed a really neat brochure called Save Our Fisheries. And as Ron was working on that, he was working with us to make sure that we had a consistent message coming from both of us. We weren't conflicting in any way. And that was really neat. Their group purchased hundreds of these descending devices and helped me, like I said, schedule these meetings. And then in addition to the sportsman show, you were also at the Seattle Boat Show. And I'll let you.
We put a video together. And it's kind of funny, at the same time, Phil was there, but we had Noah come, Bob Turner and a bunch of the Noah people. We had a meeting with them in the back room, which was right, a door right beside our booth there. So when they came out, we took them right over, and we showed them our display, this rockfish presentation that we put on at the boat show. And we had this on a video, and we showed different types of rockfish being descended. These were videos of the fish recompressing on the way down with cameras on them. And it was pretty amazing. So as a result, as part of that, Noah called me in the other day, and we had a long talk, and they're getting ready to write the recovery plan for the Puget Sound for yellow-eyed bokashio and canary. So they pretty much put me on the spot as to help them help with the recovery plan. So one of the things that they did mention was in California, the anglers didn't get involved early enough, and that's why they got steamrolled. And they said, so pretty much we're counting on you. So we're going to take the Puget Sound anglers, and we're going to use what we've developed in the ocean and bring this into the Puget Sound to be able to make sure that our fisheries stay intact and we're still able to fish at the same time. There's other ideas that can be done, as Phil and Heather mentioned, that, you know, there's one of the things is 65 feet, the last two atmospheres are the most dangerous to the fish. So if you were to slow down, bringing them up at about 65 feet, bring them up slowly, they're not going to blow up near as hard. But we got the first part of it done the first year, and I feel like it went really well. I don't really know how many people knew what a yellow eye or canary or bokashio or anything was out there. So on this is, I've probably given you these before, but the second page on this yellow right here, you can tell the difference. There's quite a difference between them if you pay attention, you know, the shapes of the fins and things like that. Things like this weren't in there. So I kind of feel this might be part of the reason that we dropped our metric tonnage last year. People are finally starting to identify fish. And I think they might be a little bit more open and honest, because I kind of get the feelings from some people they're not going to say a word. They don't understand that can actually backfire and go opposite. If we aren't showing we're catching enough of these fish, then there's a major problem. And that would show a collapse of some sort. So I think we got the general public on the right track now as to where we're going to go with this. I've been approved by my chapter, Puget Sound Anglers Snow King chapter, and the state board for more funding for this program to keep going with it. So we will again have the booth at the Puyallup show, the sportsman show, and the state board meeting. And I'm planning on keeping a tight rein with NOAA just to make sure that this thing doesn't get out of hand inside the Puget Sound. But the survivability of these fish, you know, if we can show people they bring them up slow, there's times that these things can, from 380 to 420 feet, will swim back down on their own, or maybe only have to go down 20, 30 feet, and they're gone. So the speed of bringing them up is a huge issue. But this is these are things that we're going to continue working on, and I'd really like to thank Heather, because we could have never done this without her. So we appreciate it. And then Phil and Michelle Culver, over the years, worked with quite a few years on these fisheries, and it's really nice to see us actually turn the corner to see something positive coming out of this, because it's been a pretty tough road for a lot of years. So I'd just really like to thank them and all of you.
Thank you, Ron. Gotcha. It has been a really fun thing to do in my job, and people are really receptive to it. It's a very positive thing. There's not a lot of controversy, and not all the components of my job have that. So this has been really fun. So then, touching back a little bit on what happened through the Pacific Fishery Management Council, this table shows, so back in 2009, the council, and this is on a coastwide basis, approved mortality rates for fish released at the surface, but based on depth. So we know that fish have a difficult time surviving when caught in deeper water, and that's why our fisheries are restricted into 20 fathoms or 120 feet. To just improve the survivability of fish release there. But so, and just a refresher that a fathom or six feet per fathom, thank you. So 0 to 10 fathoms is 0 to 60 feet, or in 30 fathoms would be 180 feet, so on. So the surface mortality here for fish release at the surface, you can see for canary rockfish, and 0 to 10 fathoms or 0 to 60 feet is 21% mortality. And that goes up to 50% mortality by the time you're releasing at 180 feet. And then at 181 feet up to 300 and beyond, it's considered 100% mortality. That's similar for yellow-eye rockfish. So our fisheries that are prosecuted in deep water have really high mortality for released fish. So in 2013, the council adopted, after much consideration over the year and work with the GMT and SSC, adopted mortality rates that reflect the release of rockfish with descending devices. And you can see the mortality rates that were adopted in April are quite different from a fish released at the surface. So for a fish released at 180 feet, where released at the surface would be for 50% mortality, that mortality rate is reduced to 21%. And for fish caught in deeper water, say at 300 to 600 feet, where it was 100% mortality, it's now estimated to be about 45% mortality. Similar rates for yellow-eye rockfish, and the council also did, but they're not presented here, adopt mortality rates for cow-cod rockfish, which is highly constraining to California recreational fisheries. And at the time they did it, so the council also said these are adopted for now. We understand this is somewhat new research, and there's a lot more information to be gathered. We don't know a lot about long-term mortality. We don't know a lot about mortality beyond 100 fathoms. And so that's why greater than 100, it's 100% mortality. Studies just haven't been conducted in that deep of water at this point. So that, as Phil mentioned early on in his introduction, what that means, and you, some of you who are new to the commission might not remember this, but I know some of you probably do remember the emergency closure we had to implement in 2012, closing bottom fish fishing up at Nia Bay in La Push after Labor Day. And that was a very difficult. We had reached that yellow eye harvest guideline, which at the time was only 2.6 metric tons, to our commitment to the rebuilding plans, and doing that resulted in this closure. It was difficult. And so, if anything, at a minimum, these mortality rates will give us some sort of a buffer and hopefully avoid those kind of emergency drastic actions that we might have to take in the future. And then before I ask if you have any questions, I have a little video to show. This is this was Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's research crew. This is a yellow-eye rockfish that was caught at 100 feet. What they're doing now is putting it back down. It's going to go down in this cage down to 70 feet, and then the cage will open and the fish will be released. So what you can see right at the beginning is you can see the fish's stomach is out of its mouth. Its eyes really bulged. As it gets in the water, it has no ability to regulate itself whatsoever. It's crashing up against the top. And now, as it's gone down a bit, you can see its eyes are recompressed. Its stomach's not sticking out of its mouth any longer. It's actually regulating itself in the water column, and then is able to swim off. That fish that didn't look so good at the beginning. Pretty neat video.
Yes.
So that's it. I'm happy to take any questions.
What a great project. Just good story.
Yeah.
Good positive thing. So rare. Good job. Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a brief comment about the uniqueness of public-private partnerships that from a grassroots perspective, the result is superb. And I just can't thank you enough for the work you've done within the agency, and Ron, with your group. I just think it's a real positive step in the right direction. Thank you.
Commissioner Mencken?
Similar good feelings about what you've been doing, and I recently attended a meeting of the Rockfish Research Committee that included researchers from WDF and W and NOAA and others, and I think Ron is to be complimented because he is being targeted as one of the research groups that will be doing work on descenders and mortality, release mortality on descenders. And I think that's a real honor. And I agree with Larry. This the cooperation, the collaboration between the private sector and state and federal researchers, I think is very rare to start with and very commendable. I have a question. These descenders are being used, and they're being distributed in many cases for free to coastal recreational fishermen, not only in Washington but in Oregon and California. What's the percentage of recreational fishermen in those areas now using these descenders?
Thank you. That's a great question, and we just have the first year of data from our ocean sampling program. They just began asking the question of on their interview with fishermen whether or not a descending device was used. And so I just summarized May 2013. That's our halibut fishery. That's really right after our targeted outreach and the focus of our outreach, really. So the preliminary it looks like about 30% of anglers overall are using descending devices. I know Oregon, last year they did another targeted, they had 1 year of data before we did. And then last year they did another targeted outreach and they saw their use of descending devices go up to over 40% after that. So I'm really thrilled with that preliminary result, and we'll look at it over the whole year. But I think for May, and just right off the bat, that's really great.
Yeah, it really is. Thank you.
I could probably answer a little bit of that too. LaPush did not let you put your boat in the water in the halibut season last year without a fish descender on board of your boat, and which we provided through Billy Brooks out there at the Quileute Marina at LaPush. So pretty much 100% out of LaPush. And while we were out there after the first day, which the second day in between the breather day, I ran down enforcement and talked to them out there, the ones that were out on the water. And I asked them, I said, what's the percentage of people that you're talking to that don't have fish descenders? One. And I said, one? He goes, yeah, the guy couldn't get it. So I reached in my truck and gave him a whole bag of descenders and said, here. So when you're out there and you run into another one, give it to him. And so that was really a good feeling to see that. But we didn't see the floaters out there like we used to in the old days, especially with Bokashio. People thinking that those are yellow eye. There's quite a difference between those two fish, but, you know, it's the general public, and I guess we're going to have to just keep on tap. But Nia Bay, I think, did pretty well, too. I wasn't at Nia Bay to see, but we're going to do this same thing all over again this next year. Mark Cedargreen has put it together where Westport charters all have to have fish descenders on board to go fishing. And with Kevin Lanier, the one that just came in and brought, this is a magazine, Sport Fishing, that PSA has recognized. There's some copies here for our fish descender program. And back in here, and that while we're looking, there's two articles from NOAA in there, too, about PSA and WDFW pushing this program forward. But I got a really good feeling that it's a really high percentage, but I guess until Heather comes back with that data, we really won't know. But I expect it to be a lot higher next year. We will be going into the stores next, and I've already talked to Outdoor Emporium, and they're going to put something together where we can put up some shelves and things like that, and stores start carrying them locally.
Commissioner Kehoe?
Yes. Thanks, Madam Chair. Commissioner Mencken asked my question, but I had a follow-up, too. I mean, it seems logical, then, that making these descenders a requirement would be the logical next step. I don't know if I'd like to hear the agency's views on that and also the recreational community's thoughts.
Sure. Our thought of making them mandatory right out the block was let's just start with voluntary, see how it goes. Really encourage people to use them, report using them. The fear with going to a mandatory requirement, at least from my point of view, was that you would maybe put an angler in the position where they came to the dock and they either didn't know about using a descending device, or they didn't have one, or they forgot it and felt compelled to say they used one when they in fact didn't. So we really wanted to get some data that was based on just voluntary use. Folks could feel relaxed of, oh, gee, I don't know what you're talking about, or I don't have one yet, but this or that. So we really wanted to go out the gate with that in mind, getting the best information back without folks feeling pressured to be following a law that they could be cited for. So what's to come, I'm not sure, but there's a lot of anglers that say, you've got to make this mandatory. You know, it's a rare time when anglers are saying, we would like this to be a law. Alaska just adopted it into rule that their charter boats have to have a operating descending device on board, and they're required to use them to release rockfish too as well.
I think on our point of view that we would probably push to make it law, and I think if we did it, it would take the heat off WDFW from having to play bad guy if the anglers themselves did it. So we are planning on going that route. And I think for the most part, as far as enforcement, I've never met any enforcement out on the water that was nothing. If somebody didn't have it coming and didn't have an attitude, they've always been more than nice, and I think they've done a more than fair job of taking care of the people. Usually when there's a problem, it's usually not started with enforcement from what I've seen. So I think overall, I think that's an avenue we need to go to, and I think if nothing else, maybe to make sure that in the Puget Sound that we are able to stay on task, because we do have a lot of rockfish that are coming back in the Puget Sound. They're especially the sea bass. Sea bass are back really thick now. I've got a lot of videos divers are sending me now, the spear fishermen. So it might have to be part of the program to keep us on the water. I don't really know. My crystal ball is pretty foggy right now with what we're doing with NOAA, but it might have to become part of the program to make sure that we stay on the water. I don't know, but this is something we're working on.
Director Anderson?
I won't speculate on what we might recommend in terms of a regulation, but you can't mandate a stewardship approach to how you behave, and it isn't the fact that you have a descender on board, it's the fact that you care about the resource and you want to get that fish back to depth and give it the best chance to survive that you can. The descender device is just a tool by which you employ that standard, that belief, that stewardship ethic. And so I think the approach has been, we have species that are in trouble. We care about those species. We have a high stewardship value, and therefore we have a device that we believe can increase the survivability of these fish, and that's how you get people to use them. The fact that they have one on board, that doesn't get you there. You got to have people who have them on board because they want to try to increase the survivability of the fish that they release. So if you try to force that on them rather than have them recognize the value to the resource for using the device, that's why I think the voluntary approach to start with is the way to go. And the most beneficial to the resource.
Good. Okay, any other comments, questions, statements? Commissioner Smith?
Just a quick one. I just want to publicly thank Ron for his leadership in this and PSA's leadership. And also to second Commissioner Mankin, that the public-private partnerships are the way to go in this. And looking at ignorance or lack of knowledge is always part of a problem, and 30% is better than 20, but not as good as 40. I know you guys are on top of it, but I would encourage just keeping the public press out there, you know, and in any venue that you can to get information out there. And also not to forget that I'm sure it's been written up, but in the science literature. I mean, this is a great story that needs to be in the professional literature as well. But just keep the information flowing and keep the knowledge, and thanks for your leadership.
Thank you.
Well said. I would have said the same thing, but he did it first. Director Anderson?
Just one other remark, I guess, and maybe it's a little bit in the form of a question to Heather. We have to be careful about our assumptions in terms of the number of anglers that are using these and making adjustments in our assumptions about release mortality rates. And so we've been, up to this point in time, the council, after review of the scientific and statistical committee of the research that had been done, came up with these modifications in the release mortality rates based on using descending devices. But to what extent and how will these, and when will these modified release mortalities be used?
So my understanding is they can be used now. Nobody, Washington, Oregon, and California, aren't applying them to our estimates at this point. And that was Washington's position. How we would implement them was very precautionary. So we wanted to get the first year of information on the proportion of anglers that are using them by port and all of that, and then be able to look at that and apply them very precautionary, even in a maybe a retrospective manner or not. And then I'm not sure if you're actually referring the they are looking at the methods we did, not necessarily to modify the point estimates that were in that table, but we developed confidence intervals around those and some input from our scientific and statistical committee is helping the GMT kind of refine how we applied those confidence intervals.
Okay, thanks.
Very good. Are these videos online? Are they at YouTube so people can look this, and see how to use each one of these devices?
This particular video is on YouTube and on our webpage, on our Protecting Washington's Rockfish webpage on the WDFW. There's a really neat video on there that covers everything that we've said. It's really, if you know the artist Ray Troll, he was one of the people that worked on that video, and he did a rap song. It's a really entertaining, highly informative video. I recommend that you go to our website and look at it. It's well worth the 8 minutes.
Does Ron rap?
Ron is going to do that when we're done.
I put my hat on sideways for you. That's fine. I think I can go.
I'll pay to see that.
Okay.
That will not be our next
work. I mean, this partnership is terrific. And we thank Puget Sound Angler so much for your outreach efforts and being such leaders and trying to solve this problem in such a fabulous way. Kudos.
I appreciate it. It's all about conservation. Mm-hmm. So, and Connie, you know, he's a big help at times. He can really, he knows where some of the information is to get to where we can make sure we're making the right decisions. So that's really important when you're kind of out in front of the curve. You got to make sure you're doing the right thing as you go along, because you can't afford a mistake, like a major mistake on our fisheries and things like this. And Raleigh, too.
Yeah, good job. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We love these positive stories.
Probably don't get enough of those, right? We have some more I can hand out afterwards, but there's some more flyers here off this American Sport Fish magazine that acknowledge the Rock Descender devices and our program are working together. So thank you very much.
Good seeing you.
I'd like to talk to you afterwards if you're not running for home.
Okay.